Thank you for joining us for this episode of Talking with Religious Historians. This is a short-form episode of our regular Ecclesiastical History Society podcast, wherein we talk to established religious historians to find out more about their careers and what advice they would give early career researchers. I'm your host, Dr. Emily Betts, a historian of early modern British medicine and religion. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome to this episode of the Ecclesiastical History Society's podcast, Talking with Religious Historians. Today, we're happy to welcome Dr. David Perry. Dr. Perry is a lecturer at the University of Exeter. His research focuses primarily on the 16th to 18th centuries, especially the work of John Milton, John Bunyan, and other Puritan writers. His primary current role is as a researcher on the three-year project entitled Writing Religious Conflict and Community in Exeter, 1500 to 1750, funded by the Leverhulme Trust. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Perry.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast.
And it's so wonderful to have you. I know our listeners would love to hear a bit more about your academic background. So would you mind discussing a bit about how you came to academia and your research?
Thank you. That's great. So, thank you for having me on this podcast series. I feel a slight interloper in terms of series on talking to religious historians, as I'm officially a literary scholar, as I'm based in the English department at the University of Exeter. But I have always been interested in the intersections of history with literature and also theology and religious studies. And I've probably had that combination of interests even from childhood onwards. So I was a compulsive reader growing up. And it was probably initially an interest in history, actually, that got me into literature via Shakespeare's history plays, I think it was, that got me into the literary studies kind of track. But I've always retained that interest in history. And I do have some kind of personal kind of a faith background that informs my interest in theology and religious history as well. And these are issues that have a kind of a resonance, have a personal resonance for me, and kind of informs my, I think does inform some empathy with how some of these issues were dealt with in the past. Though I do understand there's a need to navigate that issue of critical distance and historical distance as well, and understanding religious thoughts and religious history in the past. So that's a bit in terms of my influence, my interests, and how they converge around, you know, literature, history, theology, religious studies. Yeah, so I took those interests with me into my academic life. So as a student, I studied at Cambridge University. I carried on from undergraduate through masters and PhD there. My PhD research was on Puritanism and rhetoric, and that eventually turned into my first book, which is entitled The Rhetoric of Conversion in English Puritan Writing from Perkins to Milton. That book came out last year from Bloomsbury Academic, and it's due to come out in paperback form, so slightly more affordable, this month, in case any listeners are interested in getting hold of that.
Yes, I can actually put the link in the description, because that sounds really fascinating. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about your book and your findings?
Oh, yeah, that's great. Very happy to. So the book is about how a range of Puritan preachers and writers going from the Elizabethan period up to the late 17th century. So particularly people like William Perkins, Richard Sibbes, Richard Baxter, some of the more kind of radical writers of the Civil War period, and going up to Bunyan and Milton as perhaps more kind of the Puritan writers of the most commonly studied in the literary canon. It's kind of looking at how those writers use rhetoric in order to persuade people towards conversion. And it's using rhetoric in kind of a broad sense and a more specific sense, the broad sense of rhetoric as persuasive language, using language to persuade people of a particular point of view. But also looking at the tradition of classical rhetoric coming from figures such as Cicero and Quintilian that carried forward into Renaissance humanism and early modern education that's inherited by these preachers and writers.
That sounds like it will be really good and very helpful for a lot of historians listening to this podcast.
Thank you. Yeah.
That sounds great. Yeah. Well, congratulations again. I am very excited myself to read this. Again, I'll put a link and we can all have a look at it. It sounds great. Can you tell us a little bit more about this project that you're currently working on? This is an EHS endorsed project as well. The Writing Religious Conflict and Community in Exeter. What are the aims of that project? What's its scope? Can you tell us a little bit more?
Thank you. So it's a challenge keeping it brief because there's so much fascinating material. But our project is entitled Writing Religious Conflict and Community in Exeter, 1500 to 1750. It's funded by the Levy Hume Trust and it's kindly endorsed by the EHS, as you've mentioned. And this is a project that I'm undertaking with my Exeter colleagues, Bill Schutzer and Niall Alsop. We're heading into the third year of the project. We have a concluding conference next April that we have a call for papers coming out soon that some of your listeners might be interested in. That's a bit broader than Exeter on the writing, faith and place in early modern Britain. So look out for that. The call for papers will be out soon. So the project is looking at the role of written text in fashioning religious and communal identities in Exeter. But hopefully Exeter is a useful example of an early modern regional centre outside of London, particularly, that could provide a model for further studies on other regional centres across the country. Exeter has some interesting connections, some significant connections with key moments in the religious and political history of early modern Britain, particularly such incidents as the Prayer Book Rebellion or the Western Rising of 1549, in which Exeter was besieged, the Civil War period of the 17th century, in which Exeter was occupied by both the Parliamentarians and the Royalists at different times, the Glorious Revolution of 1688, where William of Orange was proclaimed as king from the bishop's throne in Exeter Cathedral, and the what's known as the Exeter Controversy in the 18th century, which is a slightly more niche debate, perhaps, over the doctrine of the Trinity, but actually played quite a key role in the splitting of English nonconformity and Protestant dissent into the factions of what's known as Orthodox dissent and Rational dissent. So Exeter's quite a key location. One minister in the early 17th century called Exeter a beacon upon a hill in a sermon and a lantern to the west, I believe. So Exeter's quite a key centre. In terms of the textual focus, we're looking at a range of writers, including people like Anne Vaughan Locke, who was a Protestant exile in Geneva and associate of John Knox, who ended up in Exeter through marriage, as known as the author of the first English sonnet sequence, which is a version of one of the penitential psalms. Also Anne Dalrich, so another Anne, who wrote The French History, which is a verse account of the French Wars of Religion, which includes some quite kind of fun kind of characterizations of the devil as a character with these long speeches. And kind of more literary figures such as Robert Herrick, who's known as a poet, but was also a clergyman in Devon, though he seems to have not liked it too much. He refers to it as dull Devonshire. There's quite a lot of kind of human interest stories that we've come across in our project. Someone actually came along to one of our public talks, let us know about a Jesuit priest called Carlo Spinola, who was an Italian Jesuit, who was captured by an English ship on his way to Japan and ended up in the village of Topsham near Exeter and wrote back to his superior about his journey and his impressions of the English in the Exeter area and how he was actually quite well treated despite the religious differences. Also figures such as Joseph Pitts, who was the first Englishman to visit Mecca after he was captured as a slave and outwardly at least converted to Islam. He wrote this book called A True and Faithful Account of the Religion of the Mahometans in the 18th century. And also some interesting stories around encounters between Christianity and Judaism in the form of the Ottolenghi affair, in which as an Italian Jew called Joseph Ottolenghi was brought over to Exeter by his uncle in order to marry his daughter, but then subsequently creates this controversy. He kind of converts to Christianity and ends up being put in prison by his uncle as a debtor. And there's this whole kind of pamphlet controversy between the two of them. So there's a lot of interesting material around, I suppose, the expression of religious belief and religious identity within particular religious communities and confessional identities, but also in terms of the encounter between those confessional identities, both in terms of conflict and in terms of more kind of friendly or more kind of tolerant kind of coexistence. So those are the broad themes we're looking at in our project. We're planning to produce an anthology of primary texts to do with religion and Exeter in the period, and also an edited collection of essays. So hopefully that will be of interest to your listeners. We have a project website at reconnect.exeter.ac.uk that will give you more information about what we're getting up to.
That sounds great. That's a fascinating project. And I know that will be of interest to some of our listeners because you're doing something outside of London. You're talking about religious conflict. I will definitely put that link in as well, the Reconnects link, so people can learn more about the project. And I wanted to know more about you individually getting involved in this project. How did that go about happening? How did you get onto this project? And then also, if you wouldn't mind giving advice, if you have any, for PhDs and ECRs who want to get involved in a large scale project like this, what would you recommend for them?
Thank you. So I guess this project, it was very much a collaboration with colleagues. I think actually I came up with the initial idea for the project because I thought that there would be some interesting local heritage in terms of the expression of religious identity in Exeter. And I think it's good to bring in local interests and to connect what's going on in your area with larger questions of a kind of larger kind of national concern, kind of larger trends in the history. So I had the initial idea for the project, but I developed it very much in collaboration with my colleague, say, Philip Switzer, who's previously works on the memorialising the dead and the transition of the Reformation periods, some of the issues that come up with memorialising the dead across those boundaries of religious difference. And Niall Alsop has worked on the expression of political identities in poetry in the mid-17th century, in the kind of Civil War interregnum period. So I felt that we had complementary interests. So it was developed together. And then my interests were, probably my background was more in the kind of 17th century Puritanism, kind of late 16th, 17th century Puritanism. But I've started to develop my interests kind of post-Restoration into the long 18th century as well. So between the three of us, we kind of covered that, like 16th, 17th, 18th century. So it's helpful in terms of pooling resources. Philip has had more experience with these larger scale projects. So it was very helpful in terms of building in connections to perhaps questions that are of wider interest in the field at the moment. And he's very good at maybe more the pragmatics of securing funding for these kinds of projects. Yeah, in terms of advice for early career researchers and perhaps PhD students coming towards the end of that period, I suppose in terms of practical advice, it's worth looking out for projects that are advertised in your area. So some of these projects advertise for research associates. Often there's funding to employ a postdoctoral research associate alongside more senior academics working on the project. So some of those are advertised, but sometimes they're not advertised through the usual channels. And actually what I'd recommend from my experience is sometimes you can effectively create your own project. Senior academics are sometimes open to having ideas for projects pitched to them. And sometimes how it works in the system is you might need a more senior academic to be the principal investigator in terms of the funding application, but actually you might be able to do a lot of the work in putting together the ideas for a project that draws on your research interests and experience, but also connects with the research interests of the more kind of senior academics that you're working in partnership with in developing the lab application. So I would say you don't have to just sit around and wait for something in your field to be advertised. You can actually be proactive. Perhaps if you have connections with more senior academics, perhaps that's your supervisor or people you've come across on the conference circuit that you've developed positive connections with. So that's some more kind of strategic advice. And then also in terms of the pragmatics of applying for funding, I think it is helpful to think about how your interests connect with wider trends in the field and perhaps areas that are more likely to attract funding, and then think about how those can connect back to your interests. So in our case, we were talking about wider work that's going on in terms of local history, in terms of trends around kind of micro history and these kind of case studies of particular places that tie into larger national and international trends. And that's a growth area in history. And perhaps our unique selling point was more connecting that to literary study, that the more interdisciplinary focus. But yeah, that, my advice is find something that links your interests to the interests of the more senior scholars you're working with, and that also connects with growth areas in the wider fields. So yeah, that would be my advice.
That's great practical advice. I think that's really helpful. So thank you so much for that. I have one final question before I let you go. I wanted to know, what is your favorite part about being an academic?
Thank you. That's great. I guess I do love engaging with ideas and texts. And I suppose in terms of bringing together that kind of literary and historical interests, I kind of love that looking at texts in detail, doing kind of close reading of texts and their kind of language and what's going on there, but then connecting that to kind of big picture ideas, the big picture of what's going on in the periods, and also in terms of resonances between the past and the present. And I know that's a bit of a controversial area for historians, with the debates around, you know, historicism versus presentism. But I think, I think that's something where you can kind of find a middle way. I think I would take a middle way on those questions, where I think there are valid concerns around, you know, misreading the past through the categories of the present. But I think we kind of need to think our way into the mindset that the past is, that Quentin Skinner's phrase about seeing things their way. But I think it's valid to bring ourselves, we kind of obviously, we bring ourselves as we exist in our own historical moments. And I think it is valid to experience kind of resonances between the past and the present, and for that to motivate us to understand the past on its own terms, as well as thinking about how that speaks to our concerns in the present moment as well.
I totally agree with you there. I think it's very interesting to kind of compare and contrast. I mean, that's just human, right? You're going to do that. And so it's important to contextualize in the moment, but of course we have a human interest in it as well. Well, thank you so much. This has been really lovely to speak with you, Dr. Perry. I appreciate your time and all of your advice. I know our listeners will find that very helpful if they're about to embark on a project or thinking of one. So again, I will link everything in the description of this episode so you can not only look up the ReConnects project that's happening right now, but you can also learn a bit more about Puritan rhetoric, which I know I will definitely be doing. So thank you, Dr. Perry, and hopefully we'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. It's been great.